into the kitchen. No one thinks about the cleanup until they need to. We're done. We have to transport and hang the meat for aging. Do you happen to have 4 pulleys laying around I could attach to the ceiling of your father's childhood basement? Let me see. Greg pretended to look around the kitchen. No. He smiled at their exchange. You know, if it were me, I would figure out a way to use a metal pole, move that old fridge and freezer together, place the pole on the tops and hang the meat that way. You don't want to put pulleys and eyelets in the ceiling. This isn't a long-term project. You just need a temporary place to hang the one moose we're going to kill. Greg Dixon, you are as smart as you are cute. She gave him a kiss on the cheek. Can you make me a cup of tea or chicken soup? I'm frozen. I'll get anything for someone who calls me cute, Greg responded. I don't think you're cute, but I'll take some tea, too. John walked into the kitchen with a broad smile on his face. His son blushed, and Rebecca made a quick exit. She went to the building behind the cottage where they stored their dry goods. She quickly found 2 sets of T-shirt sheets. Ah, water for baths, John nodded. You might just be as smart as you are cute. John patted Greg's shoulders, moving next to him to sit down at one of the tables. Seriously, I'd love some tea if you're making it. John glanced at the shortwave radio. It's 2:15. I bet they arrive at around 4, maybe later if they drive as slowly as I did. Anything left to do? Greg grabbed 3 insulated cups and placed decaf tea bags in each one. He used oven mitts to move one of the large pots of water to the brick floor surrounding the wood stove, replacing it on the burner with a tea kettle filled with potable water. If they have the moose under control, I think we're good. We have firewood and fires made in every room, mattresses in every room, fish for dinner. John let out a sigh. I have earned a few hours on that comfortable couch. I'm too old to be lugging mattresses around. John sat with his elbows resting on the table and his hands clasped together. He stared out the window, watching Rebecca leave the storage room next door and walk towards Choate Road with an armful of sheets. I like her. I like her a lot, John said out loud. He turned to his son. You're lucky to have found her. We're all lucky I found her. But yes, I am especially lucky to have found her. Greg sat next to his father at the table. We have a lot of work ahead of us, don't we, Dad? Greg changed the subject. Yes, we do. Today is more like what we can expect from our new life, finding food, working in fields. I don't know. Maybe there are other survivors, and we can grow. But if not, yeah, life might be kind of hard. Well, Greg put his hand on his father's shoulder. I'm glad we're facing it together. We've had some tough months, Dad. But we made it. He smiled at his father. We made it. They sat quietly until the tea kettle whistle blew. Greg jumped up and pulled the kettle off the stove, pouring water into 2 of the prepared cups. I think Rebecca might be a while. He picked up the cups and sat back down next to his father. Do you miss Mom? Greg asked. Well, I know you miss her. That's a dumb question. But do you think about her? I think maybe it's because I was at school and then on my own and I didn't see any of you. But I keep expecting her to walk through the door. She's gone, Greg. Believe me, I think about her every day. I roll over to an empty bed every morning, and I wish she were there. I get in bed, and I sometimes still say I love you. But there isn't anyone to hear it anymore. It's gotten easier. Taking care of your brothers, you. It keeps me focused on the good times and my job ahead. I miss her. I think of her at least once a day. I think about her at a meal, or when I wake up a little late, or when I take too long in the bathtub, and I'm like, Mom taught me better than this. Not that she was a taskmaster or anything, but, you know, I don't want to disappoint her memory. I don't think you can, Greg. And you're definitely not disappointing her now. He patted his son's hand on the table. You're a good kid. And a hard worker. I think you've even lightened up a little bit. Greg laughed. I kept telling Rebecca, I'm the serious one. Wait until you meet my brothers and father. Your mother would like Rebecca. John grabbed his tea. Now I'm going to take a well-deserved nap. He walked into the other room. Try to keep things under control while I catch a few winks. John was exhausted, between driving half of yesterday, staying up with his brothers, and working all morning. His body was done. He set the tea on the table, put his head on the pillow, and was asleep in seconds. Greg went out of the kitchen through the back door and headed down to the other house to see the moose party. 41. John, are you there? The radio crackled. John, it's Todd. Are you there? The room was dim. John was disoriented as he opened his eyes. What time is it? He said out loud. He was on his side, a blanket placed over him while he slept on the couch. He sat up quickly to try and snap out of his haze. He was alone in the cottage. John! The radio crackled again. John grabbed the radio off of the table, looked at the time, 4:10 p.m., and pressed the talk button. Todd! Hey, great to hear your voice. John! Where have you been, buddy? I've been calling you for 15 minutes. Did you have something more important to do? I've been busy. John was embarrassed. He had been asleep for almost 2 hours. Where are you? What's your ETA? We arrived at the Lebanon exit and pulled off about 5 minutes ago. I waited to hear from you, but got restless. We're getting close to Hanover. It's slow going. The snow is deeper in some of the shady spots. But we should be pulling up in about 10 minutes. Great. Go right to the old house. We have dinner caught and beds for everyone. Talk to you then. Sounds good. I hope my bed is ready now. It was a long drive. Todd sounded exhausted. See you in a few. John jumped up. He was dizzy as the blood rushed back to his head. He called out, Greg? Matt? Greg? Anyone? The house was silent. Where the heck is everyone? He walked to the boot bin, pulled on his boots, grabbed his coat off the rack, and went outside. They must be down at the other house, he mumbled. He turned and started a light jog down Choate Road. There was smoke coming from the chimney of the big house. John opened the door and heard laughter. Light came from the living room on the left. There he is, Paul announced. How was the nap? Everyone was holding an insulated cup of steaming beverage. The room was warm from a fire roaring in the large fireplace. Paul, Hank, and Matt were in long, waffle-knit underwear. There were two pots full of water sitting next to the fire. Craig, Rebecca, and Greg sat on a couch pulled close to the flames. I heard from Todd. He just passed the soccer fields. He'll be pulling up in 5 minutes. There was silence as the room absorbed the news. Hank, standing in his underwear next to the fire, spoke. Well, I guess I have to get dressed to meet the new people. He nodded to Matt and Paul. You guys want to head up and put some clothes on? Why don't you guys have clothes on? John asked. Do I want to know? Because we were covered in moose blood and needed new clothes, but someone's children outnumbered the two of us, so we were forbidden from waking their father, who was taking an old man nap. All we could scrounge together were these thermals from the storage van. Paul explained. Any other questions? You want to hear how I had to clean up in a cold room upstairs because you needed a nap? John laughed. Thank you for your sacrifice. I do feel better. As the men left in their underwear, John addressed Greg, Craig, and Rebecca. Okay, now that the muscle is gone, I can work with the brains of the group. We have a giant grill in the U-Haul. We need to get that going as soon as we can and cook the fish for dinner. We can start the fire in the den to give people two places to warm up and congregate. I'll walk up the street and get the fish. Uncle Hank will help me with seasoning and other stuff. Craig got up from the couch. We'll bring the food back. Hey, can you grab 5 boxes of the red beans and rice mix? That will go with the trout and be easy to make. It also has a lot of protein and calories, Greg asked. Red beans, trout, seasoning. Got it. Craig ran out the door. Thank you for letting me sleep. I needed it, John confessed to his son. I don't even remember falling asleep. I just conked out. We're pulling down Choate, just waved to Craig. Where's he going? A voice asked through the radio on John's waist. I'll put more wood on this fire and start the one in the den. You two go and see your family, Rebecca volunteered. She was excited to meet the new people, but also a bit overwhelmed with the idea of 15 more bodies invading her town. Two car horns blared, announcing the arrival of the RVs. John and Greg rushed outside and waved. They saw Emily crying in the passenger seat of the first vehicle. A young woman Greg did not know waved from the second RV. She was blonde and looked to be in her 20s. Every available window had little faces peeking through. The RVs came to a stop, and the side doors opened. People flooded out. Greg recognized his cousins, but no one else. "Greg!" Jay and Brian yelled. They ran to their cousin and engulfed him.
"We just came from New York City. You won't believe how big that place is. It's huge. We saw the Statue of Liberty and all these buildings."
Jay told Greg all the things they saw. It did not occur to the young boy that he should be surprised or amazed to find Greg alive.
"Can I give you a hug to make sure you're real?" a woman's voice said from behind Greg.
He turned and saw his aunt, tears rolling down her face. His uncle was next to her. They hugged him tightly.
"How did you make it here by yourself? We had given up hope after seeing Baltimore and New York."
"I had a lot of help. Hank and Paul arrived a few months ago. They made it a lot easier," he told them during their tight embrace.
Todd let go and backed up.
"Paul and Hank are here? Where?"
He looked around wildly.
"There's a lot to catch up on. Let's introduce everyone to Greg. He met a girl on his adventures. She's inside lighting a fire and stoking another. Her name is Rebecca."
John gave them a hug. "I'm sorry I left in such a hurry yesterday.
It's great to see you all again."
John made his way around the group, shaking hands and rubbing kids' heads. When he met Solange, she gave him a large hug and kiss on the cheek.
"It is good to see you again, John. I'm glad you found Greg safe. Would you introduce me?"
She walked towards the boy. "It's great to see you again, too. I hope you understand why I left." He did not know why he was asking her forgiveness.
"I understood. But next time, I would love to join you on your adventures."
She smiled at him as they walked to Greg. The boy was surrounded by people introducing themselves, patting him on the back, laughing at knowing he was alive.
"Dad, why do all the people act like they know me?" he asked his father.
"Because I talked about you a lot. We all talked about you. Greg, this is Solange. She was a sole survivor as well. We met her in Richmond, Virginia." Solange ignored Greg's outstretched hand and gave him a hug.
"It is very nice to meet you, Greg Dixon. You were missed by your father and brothers."
She used his full name, like Rebecca.
"Nice to meet you, Solange."
Greg did not know what to do other than return the beautiful woman's hug. Greg was overwhelmed by the people. They were all around him, young kids, another girl that seemed to be his age, an older girl Matt's age, two older people, two women who were trying to corral the young children, the beautiful woman with a Latin accent trying to talk to him. He tried to listen to what his Uncle Todd and Aunt Emily were asking his father. Greg looked for Rebecca. He wanted to introduce her to his aunt, uncle, and cousins. She was nowhere to be found. He politely excused himself from Solange and walked into the house. He found Rebecca in the study, looking out the window.
"Is it as chaotic as it seems out there?" she asked. "We've gone from 4 to 24 in a day."
He walked to her and grabbed her hand. It was sweaty. He could tell she was nervous about the new people.
"If it was easier with 2, it has to be much easier with 22.
He touched her cheek and turned her towards him.
"Come on. Let me introduce you to my family from North Carolina. You'll like them."
She smiled nervously, but he could tell she trusted him.
"It is going to be better, isn't it?"
she stated rather than asked. "Better is a relative term. Easier, I'm positive. Better?
We'll see how it goes. But we'll see together."
She followed him out of the den and into the cool afternoon air. Hank and Paul arrived with Matt. They were hugging Todd and Emily and crying.
Jay and Brian were high-fiving and ran towards Craig when they saw him pulling a sled full of food. There was confusion after Hank and Paul arrived, as people were introduced and stories of the drive were given. Once people realized they needed the grill to cook dinner, the storage cart was opened and the grill was ignited. People continued to talk and made their way into the house and the fires. Greg and Rebecca wanted a tour of the RVs, which Jay and Brian were happy to give. Hank and Paul showed off their moose in the basement. When the grill was ready, everyone helped wrap trout in aluminum foil to grill for dinner. Hank and Avery set up 3 folding tables in the living room. They instructed the younger kids on how to set the tables with plastic tablecloths, plasticware, cups, and retrieve folding chairs from racks in the basement. At 6 p.m., the new tribe was seated at dinner. A hush fell over the room as people realized the magnitude of the moment. Todd stood and held his cup of water in the air.
"Well, we're here, and we have a great meal in front of us. Thank you all for coming."
There was a chuckle from the adults who understood the joke. "Thank you for joining our tribe, or group, or colony, whatever we want to call it. I think we have a great future ahead of us. I don't want to be melodramatic, but let's give thanks to whatever kept us alive and brought us together." The table let out a cheer. "And one more thing? Just a request, not a command. Let's enjoy tonight, tell fun stories, focus on being alive and here. We have plenty of time to discuss the future and the work ahead. We'll have another time to mourn our losses. It's been a long day and a long trip. Let's end it with a celebration." Todd sat down. Emily was one seat over, Jay in between them. Todd leaned back and over to give his wife a kiss, something they did before every dinner together. "I love you," he whispered. Todd sat up and put his arms around his sons on either side of him. Their journey was not over, but he felt like Hanover was a milestone. The plan he set in motion 8 months earlier was finally complete. Everyone had half a fish and a large portion of rice and beans on their plates. There was wine, fruit punch, goat's milk, and water. As they ate, Solange told John about the previous night's dinner. "We had canned ham and beans. Please do not think I am ungrateful for the meal your brother made for us, but fresh trout is a step up, several steps up from last night."
"I don't know," Antonio cut in. "This fish is okay, but there's something about spiced ham and baked beans. Man, the way you got a nice sear on the meat last night, it had some snap to it."
John was meeting the new Antonio for the first time. The gregarious and helpful teenager was very much in contrast to the loner he left the day before. He made a mental note to ask someone what the heck happened in the last day to change the boy so much.
"So you are comparing fresh fish, cooked with herbs on a grill, to that meat you ate from a can?"
Solange laughed.
"I'm with Tony," Ahmed cut in. "I grew up eating canned ham at least once a month. Eating it last night brought back some memories for me. Took me back home for a minute. There are no bones in ham."
He pulled the tiny pin bone from his mouth.
"Remember that crab boil from a week ago? Now that was food. Dumping Old Bay into a pot of water followed by dozens of crabs? Man, you can't beat that."
Peter looked around the table at the people who did not enjoy it. "Then the next night, he made paella using crab stock made from the crab shells and leftover meat." He gave Todd a look.
"I'm not saying you fell down last night, but you have to admit, crab boil to processed canned meat? Do I need to keep talking?"
"Look, I'm feeling a little anger towards the dinner last night. I was in New York. There was no food. It was a long day. I didn't have anything to work with. I fed all of you. Come on, ham and beans? That was comfort food. A warm meal for your empty bellies."
Todd Mock defended himself.
"Have you heard about how my dad fed us tuna mac for like 2 months?" Craig told the group. "I'll take crab or trout over tuna mac."
"You don't know what you're talking about until you face a 50th meal of tuna fish, macaroni, and Italian dressing."
Cameron raised his hand. Bernie sat next to him.
You don't have to raise your hand, dear. As long as you don't interrupt, you can speak up.
Cameron nodded.
I ate 10 times last month. I counted. Miss Burney told me when months started and ended, and she told me it was March 1st, and I counted how many times I got to eat. I'd put a little pencil mark on my wall, really tiny, so no one would see and I wouldn't get in trouble for writing on the wall. And when she told me it was April 1st, I counted the marks, and I ate 10 times. Then you all came. I liked the ham and the meatballs. And this fish, even though I don't really like fish, I'll eat whatever you give me. He turned to Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Todd.
He lowered his head from shyness. He was a bold 4-year-old, but even bold 4-year-olds get nervous in front of crowds. Todd, choked up like the other adults, cleared his throat to break the silence.
You are welcome, Cameron.
Maybe one night you can tell me what you like and I'll try to make it for you.
As long as he doesn't ask for tuna, Mac,
Craig cracked the much-needed joke. They ate and drank until 7:30. Exhaustion soon overwhelmed the children and most of the adults. The adrenaline they had upon arriving was gone, and the efforts of the last few days set into each of their bodies. A few of the kids yawned, despite the 2 packages of Oreos making their way around the table. John stood. I took a nap this afternoon. I volunteer to show people their sleeping quarters. Who would like to go to bed? Hands shot up around the table. Todd's mouth fell open.
You were asleep? That's why you didn't pick up the radio? You were napping?
John ignored the comment and directed people towards their sleeping quarters. Jay and Brian, you two are upstairs. Not much of a walk for you. Your parents can start your fire and put you to bed whenever. Before we adjourn for the night, John continued, let's roll up the plastic tablecloths and put them in trash bags. I'll take care of the pots in the RV later, and everyone can go to bed. The way we have things set up, Melanie is sleeping with Jacob, Jacqueline, and Casey in the cottage up the street. That's the house Greg and Rebecca used this winter. We have Wendy, Bridget, and Cameron in another room at the cottage with either Bernie or Kelly.
I'm happy to stay with them tonight, Bernie answered quickly, particularly if it means I get to go to sleep right now.
She nodded towards Bridget, who was already resting her head on the table with her eyes closed.
Emily, can you put Jay and Brian down? I'll help John with the other kids, Todd offered.
His wife nodded, noting that Jay was almost as asleep as Bridget.
Matt whispered to Ahmed and Avery. You take the kids. There are enough of us to handle this mess.
Solange picked up Cameron, resting his head on her shoulder.
Let us get this little boy to bed, she told Bernie and John.
Todd grabbed Wendy, and John picked up Bridget in a similar fashion. Melanie had Casey over her shoulder. The twins, yawning, trailed behind her. Others in the group helped place coats over the children for the brief walk up the street. Greg opened the door and led the way to his house. Bernie walked next to Greg.
You and that young woman lived up here alone for months? How old are you?
Rebecca and I make a good team and work well beyond our age. It was tough, but never impossible, Greg explained.
I can't wait to hear about your adventures, she said back.
I'm sure you have a few of your own to share. I only saw a few people die during the rapture.
New York City? You had to fight millions for food. Water, supplies.
I saw more than a few people taken, Bernie said gravely.
But I am here, and Todd has asked that we focus on the good tonight.
They came to the door of the cottage. Greg opened it for Bernie. Boots go in that bin. We try not to get muddy or dirty in here, he explained to her. It was his house, after all. The living room fire was smoldering, and the house was warmer than the outside. Greg turned on several lanterns to illuminate the home. He handed Bernie one and led Melanie up the stairs with another. He showed Melanie, still carrying Casey, her room. He lit the fire for her. The starter log caught quickly, and Greg put a fire screen in front of it for her.
There's wood in the bin. Unfortunately, you have to keep feeding the fire or it will get cold in here.
It won't be too bad, but you won't want to get out of bed in the morning if the fire is all the way out. Melanie nodded as Greg gave her the instructions.
Is there a way to restart it in the morning? She asked him.
Greg shined his pocket light on the wood bin and starred a log pack in the corner. Just throw one of those in, paper and all, and you'll be fine. It will still take a minute to warm up the room, but you can curl up while the room heats. He addressed her in a low voice as not to wake Casey. Bernie listened.
These rooms are tiny, colonial. They heat quickly.
Greg gave additional instructions.
I'm going to leave the lantern on low in the hallway. There's a bathroom out the back doorway of the house through the kitchen. I can show you each now if you like, or you can find it if needed. I'm sure the kids will wake you up if they have to go. You can show them. Let me put the kids down, and then you can take me, Melanie told him. I want to use it before I go to bed.
Bernie nodded in agreement. Bernie turned and walked into the other room. Her three roommates were on their mattresses. Their fire was roaring. She felt the temperature of the bedroom rising. Solange was finishing with Cameron, making sure the little boy was tucked in. Bernie followed the adults back down the stairs to see the bathroom. Todd and Solange looked around the house. It was their first time in the cottage.
It is so clean and organized.
She turned to Todd.
Two young children lived here for months?
Unbelievable, he agreed. Greg led Bernie and Melanie to the back of the house, through the kitchen, out the back room, and down the steps to the bathroom. It's not much, but it's better than the woods, he told them. When you're in the kitchen, there are two doors. The other one leads to the chicken coop. You'll know right away you've made a mistake.
You and that young woman have a chicken coop? Bernie asked.
We do. It was Rebecca's. She found a neighbor's chickens and coop, you know, after everyone died. We brought them up here with us last fall.
Unreal, Bernie said out loud.
They made their way back into the house in the living room. Todd placed logs on the fire. I don't know if you're going to bed or staying up to talk. I restarted the fire for you.
Thank you, Todd. I think I will sit up for a minute. I want to relax and digest after a long day.
Melanie sat down on one of the couches.
Oh, my God. This is the most comfortable couch I have ever sat on in my life.
I know, isn't it? We found that at a house over on the pond. It was a beast to get in here, but worth it, Greg told her. Rebecca has vowed to take it with us when we leave.
I agree with her,
Melanie replied, closing her eyes and letting the comfort sink into her bones. Solange was intrigued and took a seat next to Melanie. Her eyes closed and she leaned back into the couch.
Wow, she said to Melanie. It is just the right depth for your legs, and the cushions are firm yet soft at the same time. It feels wonderful.
Bernie sat down in the third spot.
Even the middle spot feels great.
She looked back and forth at Solange and Melanie.
Oh, this is coming with us. And if we can, we're going to find a few more.
Todd knelt next to the fire as it came back to life. He watched the women enjoy the couch.
Seriously? He said to Greg. Uncle Todd, it's the couch. It's crazy.
You aren't going to get a turn on it tonight, but when you do, you'll understand.
Todd stood, shaking his head.
Okay, I guess. You ladies need anything else? I'm going to go back to my room and collapse.
We're good, Melanie told him, not opening her eyes. You can go.
She gave him a motion with her hand, shooing him from the room. Are you staying here? Todd asked his nephew.
No, I'll come back and see what needs to be done. I didn't have that big a day. I mean, I didn't take a 2-hour nap like my father, but I also didn't drive through snow to get here.
He started towards the door with his uncle. When they got out to the street, Greg asked his uncle a question.
When did you know that Aunt Emily was going to make it?
Of all the crazy things to happen, all the luck, all the beating of the odds.
I know, Todd responded.
We both know. I know this will sound weird, but I knew right away.
We were hungry.
For some reason, that gave me hope. Jay scared us with a flu bug that first week in Raleigh, but honestly,
I believed we would survive from day one. He gave his nephew a pat. Are you and Rebecca an item? Am I allowed to ask that? You know, like it's high school or something? I'd like to think it's more than a high school thing, but yes, we're kind of an item. Greg stopped. I haven't really told my dad yet. Could you keep that between us? I mean, I'm not ashamed or anything, but it hasn't come up. I have your back, Greg. Don't worry. In this new world we live in, I'm not really your uncle anymore. I'm your teammate or friend. We're going to rely on each other to survive. I think I can let you decide who and when you tell about your relationships. He waited a second before following up his comments. So she's pretty special, huh? You'll understand when you get to spend time with her. She's unbelievable. She's smart and funny and caring, Greg gushed. Todd was excited for his nephew and looked forward to getting to know the young woman who had captured Greg's heart. Greg and Todd looked at the houses on their right and saw fires burning in the windows. It looks like everyone split up for the night, Greg observed. They continued to the main house, walking into the front room and finding all of the Dixons with Rebecca sitting in front of the fire. There they are, John said loudly. You get everyone tucked in? We left the three women sitting on the couch, marveling at how comfortable it is. Melanie dismissed us. That's my couch, and it's coming with us, Rebecca said firmly. Relax, Hank said to her. No one is stealing your couch or leaving it behind. Sheesh, you and that couch. Is it the most comfortable couch you've ever sat on? She asked him. Yes. So you understand why I'm attached. Rebecca turned to Emily for some female support. Men think they understand, but they don't. Wait until you sit on it. I'm intrigued, Emily told her. There was a pause in the conversation as Greg and Todd pulled up chairs to sit with a group by the fire. It was a large fireplace, and there were several logs burning, kicking off enough heat and light for the semicircle. Paul broke the silence. Well, little brother, we're all here, just like you asked. He made a gesture with his hand, sweeping it around. What now? Funny, Todd said back. Seriously, Hank replied. What's our plan? Rebecca has worked on best-case locations and travel scenarios. It's early April. We probably need to get to where we want to go soon so we can plant, or build, or plan, or whatever we have to do to prepare for winter. We have to prepare for the current food stores to run out. We have 2 years of food left, minimum. Heck, we might have 5 years if we stay at less than 30 people, John told him. I agree. But it will take at least that long for us to figure out how to feed ourselves. 2 growing seasons. 2 shots at learning how to can and dry cure things. 2 years at least, Hank explained. I can't think. I'm exhausted, Todd announced. I'm sorry. It's been too long a day, too long a journey. I get it, Hank. We need to make a plan. Or more importantly, execute a plan quickly. But tonight is done for me. He stood. I'm going to bed. He turned to Emily. Care to join me? I'm always ready to hit the sack. She said goodnight to everyone. Before leaving the room, Todd turned. We have 1,000 pounds of moose meat downstairs. I propose we take the week, eat, get better acquainted with the New York crowd, study our options, and make a plan to move out in 7 to 10 days. He looked as exhausted as he sounded. I need a week to recuperate from the trip here. I mean, look at poor Hubba, exhausted next to the fire. 2 weeks isn't going to make or break us, Hank. We can spare 2 weeks. Todd took his wife's hand and left the living room. He turned left and walked up the stairs towards the bedroom where his kids were already sleeping on mattresses on the floor. A crackling fire warmed their room. Emily and Todd quietly undressed and put on warm pajamas. We made it, hon. All of us. Can you believe it? He kissed his wife and climbed into a queen bed with an old 4-poster wood frame. All the death and destruction.
all the time between last fall and now, all the things that could have gone wrong. We made it to Hanover, as planned, ahead of schedule.
Todd leaned back into the pillow and closed his eyes. He thought he heard his wife respond, but she was too late. He drifted off to sleep instantly.
42. Todd's eyes opened as he heard a whisper.
Daddy, I need to go to the bathroom.
The room was bright. Todd was disoriented and confused.
Huh? What's going on?
He asked Brian, standing next to his bed. After a quick second of thought, Todd realized where he was and how he could help his son.
Number one or number two? He asked Brian. I have to pee really bad,
his son pleaded. There was a balcony off the back of the master bedroom. The door leading out to the balcony was next to the bed on Todd's side. Todd sat up. The fire was going nicely and the room was warm. He moved his feet to the floor and walked the few feet to the door. It was locked and jammed shut, but with some heavy shoulder leaning, Todd got the door open. Todd reconsidered. They were probably going to collect rainwater or melting snow from the downspouts around the house. If Brian peed on the deck, it would contaminate their water source.
New plan. Let's run to the RVs outside.
Todd slipped on shoes.
Can you make it?
If we hurry,
Brian told him.
I have to go too.
Jay jumped out of his sleeping bag and put on his coat and shoes. They walked downstairs. Todd looked into the living room. The chairs were still arranged in a semicircle around the fire, but the fire was out and the room was empty. The house was cold, warmer than outside, but cold for a house. The study door was open. Todd saw three empty mattresses on the floor.
I think we're late for breakfast, Todd told his kids.
I heard people leave a little while ago. I didn't want to wake you and Mom, but I had to go too bad,
Brian told him.
I couldn't hold it.
Don't ever worry about waking us up, Todd said to them. It's not an issue. It's kind of our jobs to look after you.
Todd opened the door and saw both RVs parked in front of the house. As cold as it was in the house, it was much colder outside. Southern living thinned Todd's blood. He was not prepared for a cold April morning in New Hampshire. His breath blew white out of his mouth.
Wow, is it chilly. Okay, this is going to be a cold bathroom stop. Let's run over to an RV and use the restroom.
The boys scampered ahead of him. Todd jogged behind. He needed to use the facilities, too. Each boy, after finishing their business, ran out of the RV and towards the house and the warm bedroom upstairs. Todd was the last to use the toilet. He made a quick exit, opening the RV door into the cold morning air. Todd looked up the street and saw smoke rising from the chimneys of three houses.
I might actually be the last one up, he mumbled.
He was too cold to care, and quickly shuffled back into the house and up the stairs to the bedroom. The boys were in bed with Emily. They were talking and giggling under the covers, trying to stay warm.
I have to go to the bathroom, but it's too cold, Emily told them.
It's cold. Colder than we've been in a while, but you'll survive.
Todd looked at a chair in the corner of the room. There were two bathrobes made of thick fleece neatly placed across the back.
I wish I had seen these before I went.
He picked up a robe and held it for Emily. I believe you were in luck. Here is a robe for you, and it's thick and fuzzy. She reluctantly got out from under the covers, slipped on her boots and robe, and left the room. Todd debated whether or not to put another log on the fire when he heard a knock on the door.
Uncle Todd?
It was Matt.
Yes? We have breakfast going at the other house. I can take Brian and Jay if you want to sleep in longer.
Matt, come on in. Todd turned to the kids.
Why don't you two go up with your cousin and get some breakfast? I'll wait for your mother and follow you in a second.
Matt opened the door and stood in the room next to the fire. The hallway was cold, and he warmed himself.
Everyone is there, and we have plenty of food.
He turned to his cousins.
You should get your clothes on, and we can go to Greg's cottage. It's pretty neat if you haven't seen it.
Jay and Brian had yet to see the mythical cottage and wanted a peek at the legendary abode.
They were out of bed and into warm clothes in seconds. "Be good, and I'll see you in a few minutes." Todd gave a nod to Matt. "Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it. Save me what you can, particularly some coffee." "You got it. Come on, guys." Matt and the two boys bounced down the stairs, passing a running Emily, hurrying to get back to the warm room. "Get in here so I can shut the door," Todd called to her.
"Why do you think I'm running?" she said, slightly out of breath.
Emily hurried around her husband as he closed the door. Todd examined the room for the first time. There was a sitting bench at the end of their bed.
"Let's pull that next to the fire. Get warm before we go back outside and up to the cottage."
"I love you," Emily started, "and I realize it's been a while since we've been alone, and while we have an opportunity right now..." She paused again.
"It's too cold."
"Okay, I wasn't thinking that, but then I was, and now I'm not again. Thank you. I assume we have to be in a warmer climate before we renew our marital relations?" Todd asked.
"At least 60 outside, and inside for that matter."
Emily's comment highlighted that it was only in the low 60s in their room. "Here's what I want to talk about quickly," Todd started, ignoring the other conversation. He sat down on the bench close to the fire.
"Ah, it's a lot warmer when you're almost sitting in the fire."
He patted the spot next to him, inviting Emily. "So the way I see the dynamic, at least right now, you and I need to agree about where our family goes. I know that sounds obvious, but what I mean is..." She cut him off. "You want to make sure you and I are on the same page before we speak to the other Dixons, at which point you want to approach the entire tribe, right?"
"I think so. Don't you?
I mean, in theory, you and I could take the kids and the dog and go our separate way. I don't think we would do that, but if something weird happens, if the dynamic of the group turns into something we don't agree with, well, I want to make sure you and I are good."
She leaned over and kissed him. "We are going to be fine.
I will formally state, I don't believe separating from your brothers is a good idea, and I will probably say the same for separating from Melanie and Solange. I cannot speak for them. Maybe they want to leave. I wouldn't mind keeping Kelly around so she can take care of Hubba."
"Funny," Todd replied. "I'm starting to think it might be Hubba ahead of me."
"You'd be right some days." She stood.
"Let's get some coffee and breakfast before it's all gone."
She took off her robe and found her clothes. Emily brought in overnight bags when Todd went up to the cottage.
"I have some clothes in here for you. Rebecca said it was going to warm up today. Probably be in the high 40s, maybe even mid-50s. Maybe this sweater will work for later."
She pulled a half-zip cashmere sweater out of a bag and tossed it to him. Todd sat on the bench, keeping warm by the fire.
"You believe Rebecca now, too?" Todd asked her, standing up to take off his pajamas and dress for the day.
"I'm not sure what that means, but yes. Talk to her for 5 minutes, you'll understand. She's working above our heads. She's a fantastic girl, and bright as hell doesn't begin to describe her intelligence. I wish you could have seen Ahmed trying to talk quant with her. He was some high-flying investment banker, talked about analytics, wanted to know her methodologies. She wasn't rude or condescending, but she politely destroyed him. She started talking about assumptions, parameters, working models, regression analysis. Heck, I don't know what she was talking about, but Ahmed didn't either. After a minute, he smiled and threw up his hands in a mock bowing gesture.
When did all this happen?"
Todd appeared to have missed much of the evening.
"You were off making dinner or putting kids to bed. You know I'm the social one. You're always trying to avoid people through projects. I talk and listen."
She dressed and sat on the bench by the fire.
"Come on, let's go, Pokey."
Todd pulled on his socks and boots, and they made their way out of the house and to the cottage. When they walked out of the front door, they saw John opening the driver's door to an RV. "Want to ride up?" He waved to them. "We're moving one of these to the cottage."
"Sure,"
Emily waved back. She and Todd jogged to the big vehicle.
"What's up?"
Why are we moving it?
For the bathroom. We can move and empty these when the bathrooms are full. The porta-john was fine for two people, a stretch for four people, but not practical for all of us. John turned the key and the engine fired up. Plus, I think these bathrooms are more comfortable, and the kids feel safer using them.
Sorry I bailed last night. I was exhausted, Todd said to John, putting his hand on his brother's shoulder.
I made that drive, I understand. Besides, we have plenty of time to talk. There are expeditions out right now, fishing at the trout pond, checking traps, and finding a place for the kids to play. He looked at them and smiled. You two were late to the party this morning.
There better be coffee left, Emily said in a threatening tone.
There is food and coffee. We have you covered. It's great to have milk and eggs to work with, particularly when cooking for such a large group. It's going to be a challenge keeping everyone fed unless we get to an ocean or find more game. The RV stopped in front of the cottage. Emily looked out the window.
So this is it, the famous Webster Cottage.
She turned to John.
How did Greg figure out to stay here?
You have one smart and lucky kid. I have no idea. I had to find a house with solar power cells to keep myself going all winter. He and Rebecca lived colonial style. They even have a bathtub. She barely knows how to drive, and yet they brought a grocery van full of food and supplies from Concord, including chickens, and found this old home. They lived pretty well. John turned the RV off and started to get out. Todd grabbed his arm.
John, before we go into the house, what kind of long-range plans do you have in mind?
Today? I'm going to relax a little.
You know what I'm talking about. Come on.
Sheesh, when did you get so sensitive? John looked at Emily. Maybe he needs the coffee more than you do.
There are some mornings. Emily laughed. Seriously, John. We know the situation. We can't settle in Hanover, but we can't force other people to do what they don't want to do. I'm sure that our family, the big family, can come to a decision on our next steps.
How much are we considering the inclusion of outside people?
That's the question, isn't it?
John opened his arms in a fleeting gesture. I'm not prepared to leave some of these people, but you're right. We can't force them to come with us. We can't force them to become farmers or fishermen. Maybe they have better ideas.
I agree with you. The Dixon family will stay together.
Emily looked out the window at the cottage again.
I'm not sure the new people aren't Dixons at this point, you know?
She turned to look at her husband and brother-in-law.
How about we decide this? We are open and forthright with our plans with everyone. We let the chips fall. I wouldn't call this a secret meeting, but let's limit these types of family-only discussions and try to treat this as an actual tribe.
John shrugged his shoulders. That might be the best way to handle this smaller group.
Todd agreed. Well, my short-term goal is to use our time in Hanover, however long that time is, a week, 2 weeks, the summer, whatever, to learn to be a tribe, to discover our skill sets, get stronger where we're weak, create a team. I don't like the politics or decision dynamics that might come into play. I'm not a coward or spineless with my opinion, but I do not enjoy the discussions on our future when we splinter into groups.
Todd paused. But you just brought it up with me behind closed doors, John replied.
I know, and I shouldn't have. You can see how poorly I did it.
Todd walked towards Emily on the side door of the RV.
Okay, coffee and breakfast. Then let's see what needs to be done.
John sat in the driver's seat. He was not sure what just happened.
I could use some more coffee, too, especially after that conversation.
Before John jumped out of the driver's door, Jacqueline came in the side door.
Hi, Mr. John. Just using the bathroom, if that's okay, she said politely.
She was a great kid. John never had a daughter and did not know his nieces. Jacqueline was his first experience with a girl. He was enjoying it.
That's why I brought it up here.
He jumped down and walked around. There was a queue forming at the side of the RV.
Is everyone going to use the bathroom? He asked.
Yes, a chorus of children told him.
Sounds good to me. I'll be inside. John strode past the line of children and into the cottage for a fresh cup of coffee. John heard Paul and Todd having an animated conversation in the kitchen. He walked through the living room, waving to Melanie sitting on the couch playing Go Fish with three of the kids. John found his brothers and Emily eating and talking. He entered the middle of the conversation.
"You never went there?" Todd asked.
"The roads were just cleared, literally, just cleared this week. Not only did I not think about it, we had no way to get there. Let's try today. If there's anything to salvage, we need to salvage it before the thaw lets more critters into the supplies." Paul sat on a bar stool, sipping what John guessed was his fifth cup of coffee.
"Paul, have you moved from that spot in the last 2 hours?" John asked him.
"I got up to get coffee when no one would get it for me. Does that count?"
"No," John told him.
"Where did you not go? What is Todd talking about?"
"The flower company with its headquarters, factory, and factory store across the river in Norwich or White River. We might be able to find flour that will last us a long time."
Paul took another sip. "We have to get the Suburban anyway. We'll make a side trip to find it. Can you imagine how much they might have there?"
Paul looked over at Todd.
"Scones. There might be boxes and boxes of scones mix."
"I don't like scones. Too dry. They're like drop biscuits. Not a fan," Todd told him.
"Did you know I have a pizza oven in the trailer?"
"You have a pizza oven? When were you going to tell me?"
Paul set his coffee down.
"I did just arrive yesterday afternoon, so I..."
Todd was cut off before he could finish.
"Are there other secrets you've been keeping? What supplies do you have?"
"Well, I took some art from the Metropolitan. You would probably like the Van Gogh I have. And we picked up the Constitution and Declaration of Independence when we were in D.C. Oh, and Peter, he's the older gentleman, he has a letter that the President wrote for survivors. It was on the desk in the Oval Office."
Todd stopped.
"Does that sound about right, John?"
"Yeah, I think that's it for the big stuff. We have food and clothes and things like that, but the big things are the art, historical documents, and the pizza oven.
Hank and I rode bikes across the country to get here. I'm sorry we didn't take more time to stop and sightsee like you did."
Paul held up his hand in mock anger.
"I'm going to get ready for the day. I'll talk to both of you later."
He stomped out of the kitchen towards the bedroom to get dressed. He was sleeping at the old house, but his clothes were still at the cottage.
Wow, he was so mad he left his bar stool.
Todd picked at the strata made from eggs, last night's bread, and some kind of sausage.
"Where did we get sausage?" he asked John.
"Hank used the grinder on the leftover squirrel and rabbit. He's turned into quite a sausage maker. He was talking about making a bunch of moose sausage."
John took another sip.
"He's off fishing with a group that includes Antonio, if you can believe it.
What did I miss that turned him around?"
"Solange," Emily said through a mouthful of breakfast casserole. She sat at the kitchen table enjoying the brothers' conversation.
Tony, that's what he likes to be called, mouthed off to Todd in Spanish. She walked up to him and slapped him right across the face, went off on him in front of everyone. She told him to grow up or get the hell out. She spoke to him in Spanish, whispered into his ear, and he's been the new Tony ever since. She took another bite of food. She's the big sister he never had, the big sister that would have kept him in line and not let him join a gang.
Emily spoke with her mouth full of food. She was hungry.
Tony grew up on the water. His father was a ferryboat captain for New Jersey Transit. He's probably fished his whole life.
She took a sip of coffee.
Wow, John said with a smile. That woman surprises me every day. Good for her. And for him.
I bet she does, Emily replied with an even larger smile.
And what is that supposed to mean? He asked her.
Nothing, nothing, never mind. Emily put her head down, smiling from ear to ear, continuing with her breakfast.
Where is Solange this morning? Todd asked, to break the silence.
She went with Greg and Matt to check traps. Bernie, Peter, and Jamie are talking about finding a better place for the kids to play. With all of the snow, there's no open area.
I told them to move some chairs and tables and use a room in the library. It will be cold, but it will be dry and snow-free. Back to our earlier conversation. It appears we're settling into Hanover. Todd finished his last bite of strata. It's a great place, there's no doubt about it. It's beautiful and secure. We have access to water and food, and the climate is fantastic for about 5 months of the year. But the other 7 months are tough. 22 mouths to feed for 7 months on food stores alone? John stood. It's just like we said. Let's take a break up here, learn to live and work as a tribe. We can decide upon and make a move to our final location later. If we spend a month up here, I think we'll be okay. He put his hand on Todd's shoulder. I busted my ass to get here. I left a solar-powered house on a bay brimming with fish. I've been tortured by the separation from my son. I deserve a few weeks of rest and relaxation. John looked at Emily. Would you like to come to the flower factory with us? I don't think we'll be doing that much heavy lifting, even if we find a warehouse. I'd love to come. She pushed her chair back. Do you have any idea where my two sons are? My dog has found a spot in the kitchen. Hubba was on a small blanket next to the wood stove. But I think I need to find my kids before I commit. They were outside with my twins the last time I saw them, waiting in line to use the bathroom. It looks like they're playing in the library. I saw them run out when the RV pulled up. Maybe Bernie was successful in her playground expedition. They're fine. I'll make sure they stay out of trouble, Melanie yelled from the other room. You go have an adventure. Bring me back some cake mix or something sweet. Thanks, Mel, Emily called back. She lowered her voice to reply to John. Yes, I would love to go with you. Great. Let's get Paul and find a vehicle. John walked into the living room. Melanie was still playing cards with the girls. Paul sat on the couch next to her, looking at her cards and pulling on his socks. I saw you speak once, Paul said to Melanie. You were great. It was a lecture on new techniques for less invasive neurosurgery. You know your stuff. He paused. That was you, right? Oh, my God. You attended one of those lectures? Which one? Cincinnati. I was dean of admissions. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a phony doctor, as the MDs used to call me. Paul grabbed his boot and laced it onto his foot. The things I had to do to keep on staff at Hopkins. Lectures and papers. That was the name of the game. She looked at Paul. You really liked it? If you aren't a doctor, why would you care? The surgery aspect was over my head, but I enjoyed seeing faculty from other schools. Kept me up to date on the competition. Some places I could say, have you ever seen Dr. Smith lecture? Check it out on the web. You know. If the surgeon was boring and flat, it might sway a recruit my way. You were tops. I didn't direct people towards your videos. Did you know Rebecca was accepted to Johns Hopkins? The girl that was here with John's son? She's 13. How was she coming to Hopkins? Melanie did not know the young phenom yet. She was too occupied with her own brood to meet new people past handshakes and quick introductions. She wasn't necessarily going to Hopkins. I just said she was accepted. Paul had his boots on and stood. I can't believe I know two of the people who survived the rapture. I admitted one to medical school and saw another speak. I'm going to play the lottery today. Paul, John, and Emily went out the front door in search of a vehicle and baking supplies. Todd sat in the kitchen by himself, enjoying a few moments of quiet. He finished his breakfast and entered the living room to sit next to Melanie. He put his hands on the cushion. This doesn't feel all that comfortable. That's the couch, not this one. Melanie motioned to the other sofa occupied by the three little girls. I was listening to you and your brothers discuss Hanover. Aren't you the one who brought us up here? Why are you in such a hurry to leave? Bridget and Wendy were making bead necklaces on the other couch. They were not paying attention to the conversation. Sixes? Casey asked Melanie. She focused on her cards. Go fish, Melanie told her. Casey frowned and started rooting around the pile of cards on the table. I'm just trying to get a handle on our situation.
If we're leaving, I want to know when, who wants to come with us, and where do we all want to go?
Jax? Melanie asked Casey. Casey frowned again, pulling a Jack from her hand and giving it to Melanie.